Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your emergency host, Craig Fowler, and I am joined by Joel Sked.
Hello.
And Amy Canavan.
Hello.
And it was going to originally be Gary Cocker who was going to be on this podcast. I imagine he would have been hosting the podcast and it would have been on Monday night. But Gary called off sick with some mystery illness that meant he went to his bed at 9 o'clock on a Monday. I didn't really get any other details other than that. Except for the fact that he had a sore throat as well. So he's cried off. I've stepped in the following day and I've not seen as much as I might have liked usually, but I've managed to watch three games. And between us, we've watched five of the six matches and we've seen the highlights of a very routine win for Rangers that we'll talk about at the end of the show. But we shall begin with what I think everybody would agree was the most keenly anticipated game of the weekend. It was the one on the Saturday evening for the massive American audience that are definitely interested in mid-table. Well, actually, that's a very kind
that's
way
been
of
very kind. Very
yeah,
kind.
I was going to say, that's a very kind way of describing Dundee United. Also ran Scottish top-flight teams. There's obviously a huge American audience for that, as big as they are into Scottish soccer, as they would call it. Which is obviously it's disgraceful why this game was not shown on the telly or in several countries because it would obviously bring in a massive audience. Anyway, I digress. It finished Aberdeen 3, Dundee United 1. The game was at Tannadice. It was Jim Goodwin's first game in charge. I have not seen any of this except from the highlights, but I am fairly aware of the fact that Dundee United were the much better team in the first half, or better team in the first half, but they still managed to lose. Joel, give us your thoughts on this one.
Ryan Edwards, my oh my. My oh my. To be fair, so you're having a laugh about the American audience and stuff. I was delighted it was 6 o'clock because it meant I could get home from a Hearts game and watch it unfold live. And yeah, United were the better side in the first half, but they had lots of shots without many clear-cut opportunities. I think they had recorded more shots than perhaps they have done all season. It was a performance which I think a lot of United fans, certainly first half, took encouragement from, just with the intensity the team played at, the energy they had, and their attitude towards the game. They really tried to take it to Aberdeen. Did see, I think all three of us would have seen in the group chat that it was suggested that Jim Goodwin was, his game plan is going to be hit Stephen Fletcher as often as possible. It's exactly what they did, because I think he averages, I think I looked up earlier, he averages 16 aerial duels a game. He had 38 in this game. Mind looking at the stats on FootMob in terms of aerial duels won and like aerial duels contested, he was miles ahead of anyone else on the park.
But he can't find the target.
No, he scored one goal in nine now, which is a big issue for United because he is their only striker. And
it's a bit standard for his career though.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he brings so much to the team, but he can't be expected to do it all. And you look at behind him, McGrath. He's done well under United under Goodwin before, and then Ian Harkes has never really never been a goal scoring midfielder. So yeah, you look at for all their hard work, it was quite a workmanlike performance without the. Without the creativity and incision in the final third.
The best United were getting out of that was a 0-0. And I think that's totally what Joe's alluding to. It's a fatal combination that they concede awful goals and they cannot score goals. Dundee, there was, for all, as Joe said, the possession and the energy and the appearance of a new manager bounce, how we'd like to hear that of recent weeks, there still didn't seem to be that final end product. And, you know, yes, obviously Jim Goodwin is going to have to come out and say all the right things because he has to. He thinks that he had those 12 games and he can get them out of this position. I really don't see how he thinks that though, because they just cannot score goals and they simply have to score goals. You know, Aberdeen, as much as they have improved as well under Barry Robson, which is not obviously also going to be too kind on the eye to Jim Goodwin, they're not the toughest test that they're going to come up against, and I think that's a worry as well. So even with the dominance and possession that they had, and there was some nice bits of play, as you would expect from United, and as we should expect, because even just the names here that Joe's rattled off, you know, there is a squad there, hence why there was so much stupid now optimism at the start of the season of right, what can United actually do? But they just simply cannot score goals. And if you have, you know, a leader, a central defender, a captain who is putting in a performance like that on a massive night for the club, the manager, that is just, it's really rather unthinkable, actually. It was a dreadful Ryan Edwards performance, and it's not actually the first one either, is it?
He simply cannot play as a left-sided centre-back, sorry, a right-sided centre-back in a back three. He can't play on any side of a back three because he's he's so slow. You see, you know, all three goals, slow, lethargic. He tripped up at once. He can't move. I think
funny. They're funny.
He's a centre back in a back four who defends deep. He's very Christoph Berra-esque towards the end of time, his time at Hearts, where he had to just stand on the edge of the box, head clear. But if you turn him, if you get
that's
him
a great
wide,
comparison, Joel. That is a brilliant comparison.
I mean, it's only comparison half his Hearts.
Is Ryan Edwards putting his hands in the air whenever a teammate comes near him with the ball, as if to say, do not give that thing to me?
I think he's. I would give him more credit on the ball than Berra perhaps, but he can't. He just can't turn, and you can see it with the way I was curious why Aberdeen played Duke on the left, because I think he's the type of player you want to get involved more, but you can in second half you can completely see why they wanted him out on the left, because he's not going to track back, but he could expose that. Those spaces down the flanks of the back three. Namely Ryan Edwards.
It was still 0-0 until Duke produced an absolute moment of magic, in which he's done several times this season. He's, for all Aberdeen's faults, for all the flaws, for some of the hilarious results they put in, he has undoubtedly been one of the best players in the Scottish Premiership this season, and there's not many guys that can do that. I know, I think I already know the answer to this already, but the question begs to be asked. Joel, was there anything you saw here that thought Dundee United might get out of this? Or are you just just thinking now that, nah, that's it. As Amy says, there's just too many fatal flaws in that team and they're going down.
Yeah, Amy got it spot on when it's just a fatal combination of lack of goals, incision in the the final third and defensive calamity in the defensive third. They just don't, from the very first moment of the season, they've just not had the defensive balance, whether that is in whether they can play a back four or a back three. I don't think really either suits, and they don't have a defensive midfielder which protects such a porous back line. And the fact I've seen like chat afterwards is, oh, Jim Goodwin might look to use Anaku a bit more, and hopefully he brings a bit of pace and energy into the final third. Obviously won the penalty. It's very much clutching at straws. I say this now, they'll go and beat Livingston on Wednesday night, but going from like everything you've seen, it's just one thing after another, decision, game, just tallying as this is a team that it points to a team that's just going down. They've made too many poor decisions, the squad building's been poor, and yeah, it's just a team free-falling towards the championship.
Which means in 2 months' time, when Jim Goodwin has got Dundee United off the foot of the table, it's going to be an even greater achievement. He'll be the manager of the year, and he will be getting touted for the Rangers job. And I can't wait for that. I would love to see it happen, just for sheer bants. To see Jim Goodwin be able to get Dundee United off the foot of the table, but I don't see how it is going to happen, in all honesty.
Sorry, can I just button? Why the fuck did he take the job?
I think it's a huge club. Dundee United are a huge club, and I don't know perhaps where else right now Jim Goodwin would maybe think, okay, I might be able to get in here, there, or whatever.
Wait till the summer once they're relegated. Yeah.
Does he want to manage in the championship, though?
He talked about that when he got announced, that so many people said, just wait until the summer. I thought he'd wait until the summer, because when you've had a failure as a manager, as he had at Aberdeen, your next decision is crucial. And I can see why he might have thought, right, United, kind of, I'm in a no-lose situation here, because I'm going to go in there, I'm not expected to do anything. But if he get relegated, then it's another kind of negative on his
CV. It's a black dot, isn't it? Black dot.
And you ask where he goes from here. But to answer your question, Fuller, I just think that's his mentality. He's gone in there thinking, I am good enough, I'm a good enough manager. He's backed himself to go there, sort them out, and get them out of relegation. You can admire it. You can think it's naive, but yeah, it's a tough job.
If he took it a week before, when Motherwell were also, well, 2 weeks before, when Motherwell were also still a bit rank, then that's fair. Now the fact that they're nearly top six, my goodness, their rise has been so incredible. I don't understand, but like I say, I think Jim has seen the future. He knows in 2 months' time that all plaudits are going to be headed in his direction, and we'll all be eating some humble pie.
Well, Amy,
Amy touted him for the link to the Rangers job. Amy is an ex-Celtic player, so when Ange Postecoglou leaves in the summer as well, he'll be touted as ex-Celtic.
Ange Postecoglou is going nowhere. That is why it was the Rangers. There's no way Jim Goodwin can give up his season ticket at Celtic.
Amy, you did say that Aberdeen have been improved under Barry Robson. We've talked all about Dundee United. What did you make of the visitors in this game?
I think that was a performance where of late Aberdeen, when they are against it, as they were, you know, United were the better side, they simply were in the first half. And it's been very easy of late to see Aberdeen crumble to that, lose a rather sloppy goal themselves, actually.
Like giving away a Raj penalty?
Potentially. But yeah, I just think there's something about Aberdeen right now. They are certainly playing for Barry Robson more than they were for Jim Goodwin. And I think that will probably frustrate him as well. But then maybe not, because Jim Goodwin said the players always had his back. I think the performances on the pitch would certainly suggest otherwise at times. And that's where I really do feel for Jim Goodwin. And I feel for any manager like that, because that really annoys me. It's the same with like Motherwell and Stevie Hamill. As much as you give Stuart Kettlewell credit, and yes, he's made tweaks, but you know, players, it's just sometimes magic that they can almost now be arsed. But yeah, Aberdeen have managed to quietly, and I think that's the way that Barry Robson would like it, shift up to a bit of safety. I think I saw something the other day on Twitter, perhaps being a little bit rogue, thinking that now, you know, Europe could be on the cards now for Aberdeen this season. It could now be a fantastic season for Aberdeen. I said rogue. It's not my words.
I saw some Aberdeen fans on Pye Bovril saying, oh, we've got Hearts coming up. I can see us catching them before the end of the season.
Exactly. Put them back in their place.
Settle bloody down. Because, well, even if Hearts are going to collapse towards the end of the season, Hearts haven't played well in about 3 months. So it's not entirely out of the realms of possibility. But if Aberdeen are going to catch Hearts, they're not going to catch the next team they're going to talk about, which is Hibernian. 7 games undefeated now in the league for Lee Johnson's side, with 5 victories in that time. And Joel, I'm concerned. Are you concerned?
Joel's thinking, what hat do I put on? What hat do I put on?
No.
You're such a liar. It's the wrong hat. It's the wrong hat.
Oh, no, and it's Joel making a prediction. Oh, no.
I think Hibs have left themselves too much to do. Just when you look at the...
It could be 2 points tomorrow night.
When they're beating Rangers.
Yeah, I don't want to say easily, but I think Hibs have got the makeup to finally give... The makeup of their side to finally give Michael Beale his first defeat as a Rangers manager other than against Celtic. And if that happens, Hearts aren't winning at Parkhead or getting anything at Parkhead. So it could be 2 points. That's not a big hurdle to climb.
Outstanding at the weekend. Hibs were brilliant. It's been a wee while since I've seen them in person. And I thought, wow, this is a totally different side. They obviously went down 1-0, and then, but the best thing that happened to them was going down 1-0 because their reaction was tremendous. Like I say, they were comfortable playing against 11 men, and then they absolutely cruised it when playing against 10 men. The red card changed it, but nothing that wasn't already going to be happening. Hibs were all over a Livingston side who, you know, had their problems, and we'll come on to that right now. But I'm going to use the phrase, some job that man is doing, Lee Johnson. He has managed to turn things around in recent weeks, obviously since that Aberdeen game that we'll keep getting alluded back to. But I think it's so important to remember that Johnson, you know, there were absolutely stories prepped. Lee Johnson is going to be sacked as Hibernian manager. Almost like Joel prepping Chris Wilder going to Aberdeen.
Shots fired.
It's just quite funny. We've all been there. But no, Hibs are very much on the rise right now, and there was just so much to love about their performance. I cannot believe Yuan is a goal scorer now, and he actually is a real life goal scorer.
That's the thing. He's never been a bad player.
I said on record that he was like the worst attacker I have ever seen in front of the goal because it was just dreadful. It was dreadful.
He was dreadful in front of goal.
Yeah, it was all in front of goal. No, a dreadful attack in front of goal. Just the worst person possible to have in front of goal. Not a dreadful player, not at all, but in front of goal. But now he's scoring for fun. Like the first goal in particular is stunning. It's awful from Livingston, absolutely awful. But it's a cool, calm and composed finish, and it's all in the build-up as well. Second one is... The finish is a little bit scruffier, but it's the work that he's putting in. But I would be worried if I was a Hearts fan. I'm absolutely not, and I find it quite funny that yous are all going to be sweating a little bit and looking over your shoulders.
It's not right. They were in irrelevance for months, and then all of a sudden it's like, hang on, where did yous come from? Go away.
Johnson spoke about it yesterday, and he said if Hibs are to have any chance of overturning Hearts, they need to be undefeated in the next 2 derbies. Would you trust Hibs in a derby? I wouldn't think so. No. Hearts will lose against Celtic. They've not won there since 2009.
Since the battle fever already.
But away to Aberdeen.
It's the other fixtures that make me concerned, Joe. It's the fact that we're having to go to Killy and Aberdeen.
No, we've got Killy are rubbish, St Mirren at home.
Killy are rubbish, but when the Hearts ever play well against Killy?
You also got beat by Kelly in the cup. And they're like one of only 2 wins away from home this season.
And we needed a Natty Atkinson left
absolute screamer
volley from the edge of the box, an injury type to rescue a draw there earlier this season. So
But we also pumped them the last time they came to Tynecastle. They had a great record at Tynecastle. But anyway, Hibs. The Hibs have improved drastically. I really liked because you look at what they did against Aberdeen, you look at what they did against Hope McKelly. They were very, very impressive against Aberdeen, very impressive in the first half against Killy, and then you think, oh, it's just Aberdeen and Killy. However, they won at St Mirren, a very hard place to go this season, and then on Saturday was a statement win in a game that they had to win if the build up, if they wanted to challenge Hearts, which they did, and it was exact performance you need when you go to Livingston. When you don't have the ball, you need to battle and you need to put pressure on them and make it difficult for Livingston.
That's what I was going to say. Is that I think Hibs have actually finally got the midfield balance that they've lacked all season. Probably even a lot of last season as well.
CG Egan Riley is incredible.
What a player. What a player.
He's a very good player.
His composure on the ball, he uses it so well. He doesn't do anything fancy, but it's not just like sideways passes. He just gets it, wins it, and he looks to play forward. He's tenacious, and he just pops up everywhere. And I thought like Jago as well. I thought he was a much more refined performance. You talked about him being a bit scruffy in possession. I thought he was really, really good. And then
Will Fish was cracking. He was brilliant.
Yeah, but that transformation is something I certainly did not see coming.
It's remarkable, absolutely remarkable. But Joel is spot on that midfield. Egan Riley, I could have watched them all afternoon. It was the pockets of space that he was picking up. And it's been a long time since, obviously, that Hibs midfield of McGinn, McGill, blah, blah, blah. They've really managed to have someone that can be so in control. And, you know, he wants the ball at his feet. It's not panicking. It's not nervous. He's a fan. Obviously, they're not going to have him for very long. He's been a fantastic scoop up until the end of the season. A really, really just all-round tidy player.
So there's day two. There's the Jago, who's the fetcher.
Yes.
Egan Riley, who's the fetcher and the carrier.
Yes.
Josh Campbell providing a bit of goal-scoring threat and just a bit of quality.
Again,
sentences. I don't think I'd be saying that not that long ago. But providing a bit of quality for the attack of midfield. And I also like Ewan Henderson on the right of the midfield. I don't really like Ewan Henderson, but you saw it with the build-up to the chance that... which one was it?
The
Hopper one-on-one, where he wins it back twice in the midfield. And so he could come in as well. So he's somebody that drifts in from the right because he's usually a centre midfielder. So it now just means Hibs are very hard to kind of play through in that centre midfield area. And that was the complete opposite before. And this is the hope that I have with Hibs. Well, the hope that I have is that Hearts have a 5-point lead, and I still think Hearts are a better team anyway, and regardless of what Hibs do, Hearts should still finish ahead of them this season. But the hope that I have that it's going to be easy and they're not going to make us sweat for it is that Lee Johnson's shown already this season that he can sometimes muck around with a good formula if somebody comes back at this side that kind of demands to play. So I would like to think that with Hibs players coming back, It's good, obviously. You want some of your best players to come back from injury. But they've got a really good balance now. So what
if
happens...
If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, so what happens to that balance when Joe Newell's fit again? What happens to that balance when... I mean, Kevin Isbett should just be able to go back in the team, but him and Johan didn't look as good together as Johan and Hopper do. So there's another kind of wrinkle to Big Mick back. Where does he fit into things? I mean, he scored off the bench. That's great. But obviously, we're already down to 10 men and Hibs were 3-1 up. So it's obviously that makes things a little bit easier. I'm forgetting somebody else. Oh, Kyle McGuinness as well. If he comes back in, does he demand a place at the side? Does that mean you move Josh Campbell back? Who are you taking out? Does that
upset
the balance?
They're not better than the players that are playing right now, though. They're not better than Egan Riley or Jago.
Does Lee Johnson overthink it?
No, I think he just goes Nisbet for Hopper. Joe Newell, I've never bought into the hype around Joe Newell. Kyle McGuinness can't be trusted with his...
He's going to get sent off anyway.
Football IQ's there, according to Lee Johnson. He is a good player, but just his robustness in the midfield, I don't think he can warrant a place. I do think Johnson is quite happy with that 11. You talked about Johan. He's played himself. He's kind of lost trust in the group, but he's worked over the winter break, played himself back in. Now he's undroppable. The clear weak link as Livingston identified was Cabrera at left back.
Yeah,
I was gutted. I really liked him when I first saw him against in the St Johnstone game, way back in September or whatever it was. And since then, it's not really working out. He was mauled. And, you know, for the Livingston goal, it was just all so easy for Nubly to outpower, get in, really. And it's more a credit to the rest of Hibs, really, that Nubly actually was kept relatively quiet, actually, throughout the affair.
It didn't help that all of his teammates were shite as well.
Well, absolutely. I was trying to... not be too down on Livy, but yeah, it was not a very good Livingston performance at all. So there's that caveat, but I do just think that Hibs were just very, very, very good.
Yeah, defending for the Hibs equaliser is criminal. Like, it's a twofold thing that doesn't make any sense. Like, you have no pressure on the ball at all, and you're playing a high line. And not only that, Nicky Devlin, because it's just Will Fish, takes a couple of touches and then smashes the ball up the park. How is Nicky Devlin not looking at that and going, right, okay, this is when he's going to hit the ball, therefore I'm going to step up. Now, he steps up so late as if it's just been like a ball round the corner that he's not really seen coming. I mean, he should just be staring right at it. It's so bad defending. And even before then as well, like kind of highlighting how much they were makers of their own downfall. Livy had the ball for their own goal kick. It was Shamal George booted it directly out of play. And then Hibs work it back and then Fish knocks it forward. But you saw it like a couple of other times. The defending was just all over the place. I thought going forward they were pretty poor as well. They were so disjointed in attack. Nobody seemed to really be playing well. I thought Nubly was fairly decent, but other than him, Bruce Anderson was playing.
Because
he only had 16 touches. Dylan Mambula, I think he came on for Anderson, so I think Anderson was on the pitch twice as long as Mambula. Mambula had more touches than Bruce Anderson, because like Amy, I forgot that I hadn't realised Anderson were playing. Stephen Kelly as well, barely involved.
Scott Pittman looked like he was playing on a bouncy castle, because all he'd done was try to win headers all day and done nothing else, and failed at that as well, because Scott Pittman, he's about 5'8".
Midfield was non-existent. Jason Holt, I can remember taking free kicks. That's what I can... Like, I don't remember how he won the free kicks. I remember him taking free kicks. Omeyonga was at least in and about things, but not always for the good of his health.
He should give away fouls as well.
Well, yeah, precisely. But they were just so overrun. It was so un-Livy. Like, David Martindale said, post-match, you know, everything that could have went wrong did go wrong, sort of thing. But I think there is a lot to worry about that performance, because, you know, it's tricky with Livy, but this side's very much where, you know, if you're giving them the credit at the time when we thought, right, they really could be going for Europe, they really could be in a top six finish. Now that they are perhaps not going to get that top six finish, I know that we'll say, you know, Livy's main goal is always just survival. But when you've already secured survival basically by October, November time, barring a massive capitulation, then they're not immune from criticism. And I think that if Livy don't make the top six, given the, you know, the credit they had in the bank at times this season, I do think a lot of questions should be asked of the squad for not being able to carry that out.
Right, let's move on and go up to the game in Highlands, where Motherwell continued their excellent form under Stuart Kettlewell. That is now four games for Kettlewell in charge. We include the two games where he was in interim charge. They now have three victories and one draw. They were helped out a little bit by VAR in this one. Probably just get that out of the way first of all. I think you saw the good and the bad of VAR here, because I think it was definitely the right decision to overturn that penalty call. I think it's quite clear to see on the replays. Initially, you thought that just looks like a stonewaller, but the grappling from Iacovitti does look like it starts it between him and Butcher, and then Butcher kind of grapples back. So I think that was certainly the right call there, and why the technology is there to intervene in such moments. But then it intervened later in the game when Jack Baldwin took out Kevin Van Veen. It's a borderline professional foul. Personally, I wouldn't give it. I think you should always kind of be looking at err on the side of the caution when you're making such a big decision like that, because it completely changes the fabric of the game if you're going to send somebody off. And I'm not 100% certain with Conor Randall in the picture. The fact that he's so far from goal, the fact that he's quite wide as well. There's a lot of factors there which should be telling you that should not be a red card, in my opinion. And VAR should certainly not be getting involved because Don Robertson initially booked Baldwin for the challenge. And it is not, for me, that is not a clear and obvious error. Do either of you disagree with me?
I don't disagree. I agree with you that it's not a clear and obvious error. My initial viewing of it was that's not a red card. And then you see the angle from the side, which I think the ref looked at a couple of times. I did think that Van Veen was touched it towards goal and was getting it and was ahead of Randall. So I could understand why, having seen it back and seen the angle from it looking on, the referee decided it was what it did warrant a red card. But yeah, I think it was a clear and obvious error.
But I think this is part of the problem with the technology as well. And it's also part of the problem with these idiots who continually say, well, it's not the fault of the technology, it's the fault of the people using them. Like, which just drives me fucking mental. Because I think with stuff like that, you get confirmation bias. So if Don Robertson's been told that he's here by the VAR guy, he's like, oh, I think this might be a red card. And then he's looking at it, and then he looks at the angles. And for a couple of angles, you're like, ah, oh, that looks like the right decision. And then you look at another angle and go, ah, there we go. So it's like the thought's been implanted in his mind, and then you're just looking for something to back that up. And that's what's always going to happen because it's fucking pointless using this shit for decisions that are all about human interpretation. Anyway, it's Amy, objective. Did you disagree?
I agree with Joe. I agree with you as well that I don't think that it was a clear and obvious error that meant that VAR should intervene. I think if Don Robertson views it as a yellow card, then I would have thought that is okay, an okay scenario for that to sort of continue. Watching it, I can understand as well why it was eventually given as a red card. I agree with Joel, that I think Van Veen was probably in a slightly better position. Randall is in the picture. Is he going to get there? I'm not so sure. Is he denying a goal-scoring opportunity? I think he is. You know, we've seen a lot of that this weekend, this sort of, not last man, because that's not a thing, denying the goal-scoring opportunity. They've seen it there, seen it obviously in the Hibs game as well, and Arbroath on Friday. And it's all the different scenarios, obviously, the Arbroath Ackies, you know, the Ackies is going away from goal, so that's why that one's been rescinded. Jack Baldwin and Kevin Van Veen is obviously going more towards goal, and that's why it has stood as a red card. But the fact that here's three people here who all got different views on it, it's one of those subjective ones. It's one of those subjective ones.
Let me get to the football, because I'm the only one who watched this game all the way through. Oh, well, I watched it until Van Veen scored the second, and then there was about 8 minutes of added time that I didn't bother with. But for the majority...
God, you're crazy.
You're crazy.
Might have been a crack in the final 8 minutes.
yeah, I doubt it. But anyway, so... For this one, County were the better team, I would say, up until the red card, but there wasn't too much in it. County were the better team in terms of playing through the middle part. They were certainly the better side in the midfield area. The Motherwell midfield three doesn't work. That three should never be seen ever again. Blair Spittle, Sean Goss, and what's his fucking face? Yeah, Callum Slattery. It's been witnessed before under Alexander. It was witnessed under Stevie Hamill. It doesn't work. It's not got the right blend. There's just, well, Sean Goss, just for me, I don't really get a lot of the time.
International call-up, baby.
Yeah, well, Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, I think, are back to being Northern Ireland again, and that would highlight it. They are maybe sinking back down to where they came from in terms of international football, if that's the kind of caliber of player they're calling up. But yeah, that didn't work. County's midfield was a lot better. They got the handle on things with the two sitting players, Victor Loturi and Noah Kenna, who have given them a bit of steel in the centre of the park. Danda ahead of them, very quiet in the first 20 minutes. I barely even noticed he was playing. Then he started to come alive. He wasn't really getting much in the centre, but then he started to drift and create overloads on both the wings. County got some joy out of that. Eamon Brophy started off the game really in a energetic mood. You could clearly see that the two-goal, two-assist game from the other weekend was still kind of pumping through his veins, and he was right up for it. He had several shots. I know it's Eamon Brophy, so it's like not really news that he had several shots, but they were all justifiable. He wasn't just shooting from anywhere. they were all kind of in good positions, and he was just really buzzing about the play, making great runs off the ball, getting himself involved. And County had a lot of their aspects of their play that they liked. However, why I wanted to couch a little bit and say, like, County were the better side, but really better in the midfield, is that Motherwell still retained the threat, because throughout the game, even before the red card, and the red card is another extension of it, whenever Motherwell managed to get the ball up, get it direct, go forward to Jonathan Obika and Kevin Van Veen, they constantly caused County problems. And so the evidence was Obika's header that he should have done better with in the first half. Kevin Van Veen had a really kind of dangerous turn on the box, which eventually I think got cleared for a corner. Van Veen brings a save at Laidlaw. That was all just them two winning their individual battles. And it speaks a lot to Jonathan Obika. He's certainly got his detractors within the Motherwell support. However,
he's not very good.
Yes. However, his arrival has meant that Van Veen no longer has to kind of patrol the entire final third by himself and can just stick to being a centre forward. And when he's able to do that, he's able to score goals. When he's got somebody playing alongside him who's good, Kevin Van Veen is good. And you saw it in this game with two well-taken goals. Obviously, the caveat that County were down to 10 men by that point, but obviously Van Veen wins the red card as well off of Baldwin. So he was a huge factor. So County, for all that was good to be pleased about, I still thought they had defensive frailties even before the sending off.
I think it really does show you how I'm not a fan of for Obika, not just because he scores against Hearts all the time, but I just think he is a limited player. However, he is an effective limited player, because you've seen it with Ross County. Obviously played a back four against United, switched to a back three despite fielding the exact same 11 against Motherwell, and Hearts had a back three against Motherwell, and they still were unable to handle the front two, because you think natural, right? You want three centre backs to go up against those two to leave one spare, and yet they still cause real issues. I thought the Touré was certainly poor for the first goal, first goal not tracking. Who was it that Spittle?
That was another thing I meant to bring up. Dean Cornelius coming on made an impact on Motherwell. He was involved in the build-up to both goals, and he just gives them a bit more drive, a bit more energy, creating stuff. I mean, he's not a creative player in terms of what you typically think of in terms of ingenuity, playing through balls, you know, seeing passes other players that type of thing. But he makes things happen further forward.
But how good was he against Hearts? Him and Spittle, just their work rate behind Obika and Van Veen, just to make it difficult for a opposition, which made the decision to start slattering Goss, who I don't think have ever worked in their Motherwell careers, a very strange one.
Well, Joel, I was distracted when watching that Hearts Motherwell game from the performance of Dean Cornelius, because I was slack-jawed at how horrendous Barry Mackay was. But he managed to get himself a couple of assists on Saturday as Hearts defeated St Johnstone 3-0 at Tynecastle.
I was wondering, where the fuck are you going?
That's a link for you right there. Yes, Joe, we were both at this one. Hearts 3, St Johnstone 0. In the end, a very comfortable afternoon once Hearts got their second goal. But prior to that second goal, it was another in the many, many examples since football returned, really, with the exception of maybe that Killie game you referenced earlier, where Hearts have not played well, but managed to get a result, and not only get a result, but get a convincing one as well.
Yeah, it was a weird one. It was a weird one after the game. Nielsen described it as free-flowing at times, disagreed with that. A couple of fans just described it as a brilliant performance, very much disagreed with that. I thought 3-0 flattered us massively. St Johnstone, all credit to them, because they made it very difficult. They made it uneasy for Hearts just because they pressed really well. They had a lot of energy.
Yeah, that's maybe something you should add. The Hearts were sometimes makers of their own downfall in defence, with some really hairy passing out from the back attempts.
Whether it was Clark or Snodgrass.
Or James Hill.
or James Hill. Unsurprisingly, just again, I was surprised that it was Sibbick on the bench and not Hill. But yeah it was quite ponderous, and it allowed. You can look at it one way or other. Allowed St Johnstone to get a foothold in the game, or St Johnstone made it difficult for Hearts to play out. I just think St Johnstone, if they had Nicky Clark and maybe Dan Phillips, it would have been different. I think they missed them both, especially Clark, who is a much, much more intelligent striker than Conor McLennan. McLennan's not a striker. I'm not sure what he is, to be honest. I don't know.
An athlete.
Don't know if he's a Premiership forward, that's for sure. But you see it with, you see what St Johnstone were trying to do. They were trying to isolate May against James Hill on the left-hand side, and Hill did have struggles at times, but they just similar.
How was their midfield, guys? How was their midfield? I like Graham Carey. I like Cammy McPherson since he's came back.
You like Graham Carey?
I don't mind Graham Carey. I don't mind Graham Carey at all.
He's not any good.
He's got a nice left
foot. Yeah, he's got a lovely left foot.
He's got a nice left foot, but he is very, very rarely involved. Which is an issue if you are if you're St Johnstone and you need your players to be involved.
Cameron McPherson was good.
McPherson was good against, so they had to drop Pye Halberg back. Halberg was okay. McPherson was good. But they just, I think there was just a good St Johnstone performance. It just lacked any real quality, especially in the final third, which did allow Hearts just didn't have to be that great to win comfortably.
Yeah, for the Hearts performance.
Josh Ginnelly.
Yeah, Josh Ginnelly continuing to show that he's just become a massive player in this team.
Will he sign in a contract?
It's interesting because until recently, I'm not entirely sure how much Hearts wanted him to sign a new contract. Even like during his good spell, I kind of, you still kind of got this feeling that Hearts were kind of like, he's in good form now, but let's see what happens. And then he goes out against Motherwell, Hearts miss him massively, and then he comes back at this one and scores two goals. And again, as I always kind of say, he offers a good option as well, where you can always see him kind of pointing like for a ball in behind, and without that, Hearts don't really have it. I mean, you can kind of, in theory, you could replicate a little bit with Stephen Humphreys, who has a bit of pace about him himself, but Stephen Humphreys just never looks that great whenever he starts a game.
The key difference I see with Humphreys, I do agree that he could play that role. Ginelli's a lot more relentless than Humphreys in that he'll make a run, and if he doesn't get the ball played, he'll get back in a position and make another run.
Yeah.
Humphreys will make one run, and then that's him.
Did he get the ball?
That's him until the next phase of play or the next attack. He'll make another run, whereas Ginelli's constantly relentless. Found him really interesting speaking after the game, and you saw it in the way that we played against Motherwell and then St Johnstone. So against Motherwell, as Nielsen said, everything was defeat. The game, our game was kind of really compact because there was no one stretching to play, which meant there was very little space for Shanklin to get on the ball. Against St Johnstone, Ginelli just keeps running, going in behind. And then you saw how often Shanklin was getting into these pockets that we want him to get into. So he's really good with the ball at his feet. He turns, set up a couple of chances, had the chance himself. But then Ginelli spoke afterwards saying that he's noticed that opposition defences are starting to drop off him, which is good for the likes of Barry Mikhail, that is good for Lauren Shanklin, Snodgrass, etc., etc. And then he also said that he's, the second goal he scored, a tap-in, he started to study players. He's been looking at Kyogo to see how he's in a position where Celtic just cut the ball back or play the back ball across, and he's in the right place at the right time. He felt that he was hanging out too much, and again, that's just experience. So I wasn't, even last week I was thinking, if Ginelli doesn't sign a new deal, I wouldn't be all that fussed, just because, and I just thought it was a purple patch. But then when you analyse a bit more, listen to him speak, then you see how important it is. Do I think we need a striker who's better than Ginelli? Absolutely, next season, but a very good squad option, that's for sure.
Yeah, certainly. And a couple of things to say, Barry Mackay was good after, like I said, I thought it was horrendous against Motherwell, but again, I've been banging on about this with Mackay for ages this season. For the majority in this game, he kept things simple. And he does very well with the goal. That's kind of Mackay at his best, making the initial pass, getting forward, playing a good ball across. But for the most part, like, I've just felt so many times this season, he's tried a through ball when he's just really trying to force it or putting it across where it's not there. And sometimes in games like this, so it wasn't really till the second half when he really properly got going. But in the first half, just get the ball. His touch is great. His touch is perfect, really, a lot of the time. Get it. Find the Hearts, man. Like, you don't have to be trying all the time to just force it through defenders. And when he does that, I think it then builds his confidence up, and then he can do what he done in the second half. And the other player I wanted to talk about was George Grant.
Yes.
Who maybe had his best game in a Hearts jersey. Certainly one of them.
Yeah, I think I think it was certainly up there. It was a noticeable difference. He made the noticeable difference, especially the first half. He was, even without the ball, he was making some really good runs. He was combining well with Smith. Smith was coming in field. He was basically just being a wee bit more direct. He saw against, I keep referring back to Motherwell. Devlin, for all his positives, is on the ball play, lets him down so often. And you compare that to Grant, who is far more positive, far more assured. There's space for both of them. They both do a job, but I think he's started to see what Grant was brought in to do. Wanted to play, Nielsen wanted the team to play a bit higher to get him higher up the pitch, and it meant there wasn't just Snodgrass and Devlin right beside each other as they were against Motherwell getting into trouble. Grant was offering different kind of angles and options, and it was a much more positive impact on the team.
Amy, you've not said anything in a while, so let's go to you first of all for St Mirren 1, Celtic 5. St Mirren threatened again to do to Celtic what they did earlier this campaign by being the only team in Scottish football so far this season to beat them, when they won 2-0 in Paisley earlier on, going 1-0 up through Mark O'Hara. But then Charles Dunn makes a right royal cunt of things, gets himself sent off. Celtic score 12 minutes at the second half, and then the roof just collapses in on St Mirren as Celtic eventually run out 5-1 winners. What was your take on your big team from Sunday?
I was trying to think of a smart response, and then I just didn't actually have one. Boring grows one of Zardo.
It's half 10 late.
Exactly.
Just refer back to Wilder, it's fine.
I really was trying to think of something quirky. I've clearly been out for so long, just didn't use go off about Hearts, so I've just came out of the zone. Celtic were just rather relentless in the second half, as expected. It's always going to be an uphill battle for any side when they go down to 10 men. As you said, it's just silly from Charles Dunn. He's obviously owned up to it, but you're just like, even for... No, not as a Celtic fan, if I take that hat off and try to look at it as a neutral and as a fan of Scottish football in general, you're not wanting Celtic to have such an easy pass. So you want to see them, because I think it's fair to say that there was a little bit of angst going, okay, St Mirren could do the double over Celtic. And I think the more that it's talked about, the greater chance of that actually happening. And the fright was given with that early penalty, which is a penalty. I hate how long it takes, but it is a penalty and it's the right decision. And again, St Mirren done well up till then, really frustrating Celtic, as you would imagine they would have done for at least an hour to 70 minutes, as they have done in the previous meetings at Parkhead, and the Cup and the league since. But obviously Celtic just turn into like a mad machine in the final 30 minutes, and it's a total juggernaut from Ange Postecoglou's side, and that's just basically then happened. The key changing point again, and I'm pretty sure Joel will agree with me on this, because I'm sure I've heard him say it before, but I beggar's belief, Celtic are going to lose Lila Bada in the summer because the man is simply not getting to play enough football. He's not starting enough games of football, and he deserves to be starting enough games of football.
Why is Maeda playing? Why is
Thank
he
you.
Playing? He doesn't need to play in a game like this.
He doesn't. He simply doesn't. I love Maeda. I really, really do. I think he's a great player. But Celtic's biggest threat. When I see that front three of Kyogo supported by Jota and Abada, it's, you know, rub the hands together, you're like, right, we're sorted. This is it's an unbelievable front three. And I'm not saying we're not an unbelievable front three with Maeda's playing, but Abada completely changed the game when he came on. Yes, he takes his goal so well as well. But he is just, oh, it's chef's kiss stuff from Leila Abada.
I was going to ask Amy, because watching the first half especially, I was just thinking, and going back to the Viaplay Cup final, was like, Jota's, for all his talent, he's like really on the periphery of games. He's probably not having the impact you expect from someone of his talent. Yes, he still gets numbers, etc. Playing on the right, I take it he's just, how do you feel when he plays on the right?
I love him on the right. I really do.
Oh, really?
I really do love him on the right. Absolutely. I think I agree with you. Wait a minute. No, yeah, I do love him on the right. I thought wait a minute. I've got, you know, I have to do like my left right hand thing and check that I'm on the right.
Because obviously, when he plays with Abada, he's on the left. And then when he plays with Maeda, he's on the right.
Yeah. So that's the conundrum, though, because I get your point. But I personally do think that Jota is more comfortable on the right, which probably goes against many things, but I just like him cutting in. But who am I to say that? Because you look at the impact that he can have at the weekend, and that's the Abada effect. And I do think that is why Maeda does start more games off late. To be honest, I don't know why Maeda starts more games off late. That's me perhaps trying to force it in. But to be honest, I just love Jota playing wherever. He's simply so good. But I do take your point that he can be... I think there's more chance of a moment from magic from the right, but probably consistently, he probably is better off the left. But I'm here for a mad moment of sheer quality and then wiping out a linesman in some sort of celebration.
Is that when he nearly
touches the shoulders? Yeah. And there was some chat that, oh, you know, he's pushed an official. As a fuck.
I did not see any of that, but no, he certainly did not push. Going back to the front feet, Maeda heard him described as being the best player in the world when there's a ball not involved, which I think sums him up pretty well.
The man loves to run.
Yes, he does. He's enthusiastic. He's willing, and you can completely understand why Postecoglou loves him. But I'm thinking you play Maeda when you're coming up against Real Madrid. Rather than St Mirren, where you want people who are going to make a difference.
It's
on the ball, who are able
isn't
to take,
it? Yeah.
Yeah, who can take players on in tight spaces. Abada does that. I actually think Abada has the highest ceiling of any of Celtic's front players. I don't think that'd be controversial saying just because he's...
Oh, that's not controversial, no, I don't
so
think
young.
So.
He is so talented. He's find him quite an intelligent player for how young he is. And it just goes back to the strength and depth, bringing Abada on, scoring, bringing O on, scoring, bringing O'Reilly on, scoring.
O did not deserve to score, by the way. Not for that penalty run-up. And the penalty itself. Shocking. Should have been disallowed.
What's your problem?
Fucking look at the neck of that run-up. Come on, Amy.
Does he do a wee skip? Is that the one where he does a wee kind of...
He does a wee shimmy, and then he does
I've
a skip.
I've not got a problem with that. Something okay. a little
you,
bit.
Yeah, you fucking okay. wouldn't they, would you?
What are you trying to say? But no, St Mirren will not be, their season will not be defined on games like this. And again, it's, and that's what I mean, that if Dunn doesn't get sent off, I think it could have been a much more interesting affair, perhaps at least until the 70th minute.
So frustrating. That
rather
like
than the 45th.
Stuff happens. Yeah. Like, so, like Jesus, like, because you... You get excited any time. Celtic Rangers, any time that our team looks like they might give them a bloody nose, you're like, oh, here we go. And to throw it
and
away
as a fan.
Such a shit error.
That's probably an awful thing to say, but like I was in the car because I was going to Ainslie Park to do commentary, and obviously it comes through on the radio, blah, 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 with no doubt. And then I sit and go, right, all right then, let's see what Celtic are made of, sort of thing. And it's another test. And then it's just always going to then be really rather simple. And I know that is so obnoxious of me to say, but it's the way that Ange Postecoglou has Celtic playing right now.
I think certainly the first 20 minutes, St Mirren were really, really impressive. Curtis Main was making himself difficult to play against, as he always did for the opening goal. And I thought Gogic had a really interesting role. Like he was just bombarding out of defence and closing boys down. But Celtic, if you compare the game on Sunday to the previous game at the Smeaser Stadium, I thought Celtic had a much better handle of it. I thought they were creating better opportunities even before the red card that Charles Dunn. And I do think it was, yes, the red card completely changed it, but I still think the outcome, not 5-1, but the outcome would have been the same with Celtic winning comfortably.
Speaking of winning comfortably, Rangers 3, Killy 1, our final game to talk about here. Rangers were 3-0 up at half-time. Killy scored in the second half.
End.
I'll come in and talk about Colac. You could tell straight away that Colac was desperate to make an impression. I watched the highlights on Saturday, so my brain's a bit frazzled, but it's certainly one of the best chances or one of the goals. It came from Colac running to get a throw and take a throw in really, really quickly. You saw a lot of the performance from Colac that you kind of think, does he have in his game? He was occupying defenders. He was very mobile. He was dropping in and linking play. He was being the focal point that perhaps a lot of Rangers fans want Morelos to be being that nuisance, being that, but also having that goal threat. Even if he didn't score, he was really involved in the game. Sometimes I think when you play at Colac, he can slow the game down. He can't really play one touch, but he was doing absolutely everything correct you want from your lone striker who is supported by a few attacking midfielders. And he probably could have had maybe 2-3 goals, but through selflessness, Sakala's inability to look up and a good save, I think, from Walker, or a good block, which led to one of the goals as well. So he was... I think Cantwell was the best, going by what I've read and seen. Cantwell was the man of the match, but for me, Colac was the one that stood out.
Cries off, why didn't he start the cup final?
I was literally just about to ask you, Amy. Raskin, Cantwell, Jack, is that the midfield three that should have started against Celtic?
Couldn't care, mate. Couldn't they care at all?
I'll answer it, yes.
you've ditched. You only had that unbiased hat on very briefly there. You've already thrown it away. Thrown it in the fire.
Absolutely. I think that was a huge shock, actually, when the teams came through for the cup final. And obviously for both sides, because I think Cantwell... He does have a bit of something about him, and if there is going to be someone who can spark something, as was shown at the weekend, he's just a little bit calmer and cooler, and he's just got a little bit of quality. Like Michael Beale obviously went for the tried and tested.
And crucially, unlike Malik Tillman, he's fit.
Well, also that, yes, and went for the more robust approach, trying to perhaps... frustrate Celtic's midfield and stamp them out rather than not match them, because they're not that good, but at least put a little bit up more of a fight. So yeah, I would have feared more, of course, seeing that, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think it was kind of following on from what Amy's saying there. I think it was a lineup or a midfield choice which there was a bit too much respect to Celtic, a bit of fear.
Absolutely.
Bit of fear, perhaps. And you signed these two players in January, two players who spent a bit of money.
And said
the starters are going to be kind of the future of the Rangers in the field, and they've not started them. Instead, started two players who were clearly weren't 100% fit. It's a big red flag. But he started them just when it mattered. Not in the final, but at a home game against Kilmarnock.
Who have still yet to win away from home. So, you know, big games.
Can I add before we finish, and just on Kilmarnock,
I was going to say, has anybody got anything to say about Kilmarnock before we finish?
I've got a cool question to ask, but I probably should have asked Craig Anderson or Scott McClymont. They might be able to tell me if they bother to get this far. Scott Robinson.
They're skipping right to the end because they know that this is the game.
Scott Robinson. not starting, or not playing, it's a strange one. He's played against Motherwell, and McInnes afterwards spoke about Kyle Vassell. It's like he was kind of what he wanted to do at Rangers is hampered because Kyle Vassell was the one player who can run in behind the defence. Okay, Robinson's not that kind of player, but instead he started Armstrong up front with Doige. But you think with Robinson, what he did at Livingston and the way he occupied defenders, made himself a nuisance, is mobile, and someone can deal with a long ball, whether it's putting pressure on the centre backs, and he did it so well for Livingston. Yet he was on the bench, and then when McInnes had to change it, he brought Jordan Jones on, maybe put Armstrong out wide. It had a positive impact, but I just find the lack of game time for Robinson. I know he's been out injured for a fair bit, just a wee bit baffling considering
there has to be something reoccurring. Yeah, because I agree with you that, and there was so much made of his return, wasn't there, that it was, you know, obviously a long he'd been out as well, but it was just because, yeah, this is a bit of a bright spark, and he came back like slowly but surely, because he's come back against Hearts at Tynecastle actually.
Yes,
he was very impressive. I remember taking in Kelly against Aberdeen at Rugby Park. Yep, he was very good, and as Joel says, he just has that instinct. He can grab a game by the scruff of the neck as well a little bit, and he's going to offer something, and offer a goal, and not have to just have it all falling on the shoulders of Danny Armstrong.
I think
there has to be something.
The strangest thing is that he started and scored in Kelly's last game before this one.
Yeah, I know, but I think that there has to be something more underlying. There has to be, because it
I feel like with David Martin, maybe it's just a wee pin in the arse.
It doesn't make sense.
Right, that'll do us. Thank you very much to Joel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to Amy.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody for listening. Probably should give one more shout out because we've only got a couple of days left, but we've got a live show. We're playing at Hampden Park. Tickets are £25 for our live show, but it will last. I think we start at 7:30 and doesn't finish until at least 9:30. So you get 2 hours of our sizzling chat. You also, the £25, it's all towards charity. We're not getting any money for this. So it's for a very much a good cause. It's for children first. And including that £25, you also get a pie and a pint as well. So there's much, much to be taking this up on. Tickets are starting to go a bit. Joel, I don't know whether it was my sales pitch or your sales pitch from last Thursday that's meant a bit of an uptick in terms of those tickets going out. But yes, please come see us.
I actually wanted to go and see used to. There's no way it's had you. It's not
them. Not us two. Sean's there.
Sean's there. Telfer's there. Tony's there.
I'm not there. That's
crucially, you're not there, so that should help me up to keep as well.
Boys' night.
See if you and Taylor wasn't involved, I reckon we'd have sold out.
Yeah, that's true.
I agree. He needs to just understand so I can at least take the noble approach. Nobody wants to see a Celtic fan back at Hampden. Nobody.
That's true. Although we are going to have a section talking about favourite Scottish Cup or favourite moments in Hampden.
So that's why we want you and Taylor there.
We only talk about like once in like the last, you know, I don't know, 10 years or so.
He's not got many chips from.
Get Graham talking about the Motherwell game. Get Tony talking about 2016.
God, you'll be there till midnight.
Joel and I will just set this one out. I'd like if I were serious, beat Rangers at Hampden.
No.
No. That's the present.
Just hips a few times.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so yeah, so make sure you'll find the links. We've tweeted out about it loads, so you'll find it be easy enough to find a link if you want to buy a ticket. Also, I'll include one
description.
The blurb, whatever you want to call it, underneath this podcast on your podcast player, so you can easily click onto that and then join what will be a very good night in the south side of Glasgow this coming Friday. That's it for us. We'll be back again on Thursday. Goodbye till then. Sports Social Podcast Network.